Yeah, they're going well. You know, look, it's, people say a lot of things. You know, people get hurt and they lash out. You know what I mean? And so there's a lot of that. There's a lot of misunderstanding. There can be a lot of negative influences around you. You know what I mean? As a human, especially, you know, when you're connected to something that's successful or famous or whatever, you know, people come around and everyone has an agenda, and sometimes they push their own agenda to the demise of the thing that they wanted to be around, which is astonishing to me, but that's what it is. And so, you know, there's a lot of reasons for why the band split up. There was a lot of negativity, a lot of dysfunction, a lot of toxicity, but there was also at the heart and core of the band, my brother and I, you know, writing those songs. When I started writing songs for Shake Your Moneymaker when I was 17. I made the record when I was 19. He was 2.5 years older than me. And so there's, and they were made from a very authentic, loving place. And that's ultimately what it comes from. And so if that's the core of the band, which it was, you know, that love for music, that love for what we wanted to do, the dream that both of us had, I think that no matter how kind of shitty it gets over time, I think, you know, once you get away from it and look at it and start appreciating it and regaining your appreciation for it. You know, when you're in a bog and, you know, you're sort of surrounded by mud and a lot of times you can't raise yourself up to see it. And it isn't until you get away from it and look back and you can kind of see, okay, yeah. There's that yeah. sort of flame, or there's that gem. There's the thing that bore it. And I think Chris and I are both in that space right now.
What was it like growing up in your house? I mean, if you take the recent history aside, and yes, everything seems to be put to one side, you've decided to go out and tour this album, which is fantastic. It's such a great album. I'm a sort of wannabe drummer, and Hard to Handle was one of those tunes I learned very early on. I would have been leaving what would be the equivalent of high school in 92. So 1990, this album would have been huge on my radar, you know?
Yeah. Well, it was, you know, for us kids, my dad was a musician and he loved music. And my earliest memories of being a kid was like listening to Deja Vu, Crosby, Stills, Nash.
Oh, my God. One of my favorite ever. Love it. Yes.
Yeah, so he would be listening to that. And, you know, when we're 2 years old on our old console record player, you know.
Yeah.
And there was always joy there. And the joy that music would bring to my dad. He loved Flying the Family Stone and Joe Cocker and Mose Allison and, you know, Muddy Waters and everyone in between. And so that joy. And I always draw that sort of feeling from listening to music that moves me to the joy that my dad would get, because he would just smile and dance around and jump around. And so that's what was some of the earliest moments. I mean, Chris and I grew up and it was pretty, you know, I don't know, because I see other families and they seem close, but Chris and I were really close. And, but also sometimes we would fight really, you know, pretty heavily. But you know, when you're a kid, 5 minutes later, you guys are out playing again. So to me, it seemed like a relatively normal.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I love that. I mean, I can just imagine. Yeah, I mean, pure punch up 1 minute and then, you know, going for drinks the next minute. I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. Was your dad, would he be back in the day when you would take up the Crosby, Stills, Nash records and you would put them on the record player or whatever, was your dad protective of them? Would he be like, oh, don't you touch that? That's or would he be happy
no,
that
no.
you were putting them on?
He would love it. You know, he was never that.
That's
way.
Lovely.
I
that's
mean,
a lovely picture.
The only way, and you know, like the only time he kind of put his foot down, his dad had these two guitars because he was a musician, and he had it was this old guitar from Tennessee. These brothers named the Gower brothers, and they made this really cool guitar for him. And then he bought like a 1953 Martin D28, and that was like those are his two guitars.
His babies.
So I'd go in and pick up. Yeah, I'd pick up his guitar to pick out songs before I ever learned how to play. To pick out songs, you know, just like play it on one string, pick out the melody of the song. And then he was like, all right, I got to get you guys a guitar. I don't want you to play my guitar. So it was cool, you know. And then he finally gave me his that guitar, you know.
Beautiful. And do you still have that?
You know, and I do, yeah, I still have it.
Do you take it on the road? No.
I mean, no, I keep it with me all the time.
Do you? Oh, beautiful. Good memories. Really nice memories. Yeah. You know, it's interesting, though, you mention the brothers, the guitar brothers there, who have a very similar surname to two brothers on this side of the Atlantic who don't get on whatsoever, but yet had a great band called Oasis, Noel and Liam Gallagher.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's interesting, though, because you've got the similar situation. So you had two brothers in a band who are now fighting, apparently, according to, you know, everybody, including themselves. If there was one thing you could say to Noel and Liam, bearing in mind your own story about getting back with Chris and making music again together, what would it be?
Well, you know, we toured with Oasis in the States. We did the Brotherly Love Tour, and it was pretty amazing because they were getting along and Chris and I were going at it on that tour. And I even think we kind of freaked them out sometimes. You know, I remember we got a huge fight and Noel and Liam were outside the dressing room listening, going, oh my God. And I was screaming and Chris was screaming. But, you know, look, man, to each his own. Everyone has their own shit to deal with. If you love your brother, if you love your music, if you love your legacy, you know, if to sort of get away from it and then have an appreciation for it, man, there's nothing better than that, you know?
Yeah. When you come to see us, and this is what's exciting, it's going to be in the Big Three Arena, which is a really good size venue. It's actually, I think it's the seventh busiest concert venue in the world. So it's really a big place to be playing compared to the national stadiums when you were back with the Crows back in those days, or the old SFX, or even the Olympia, which is stunning as well. When you listen to the album now, and I know we're kind of close on time, but when you listen to Shake Your Moneymaker now, do you think you guys will play it better, or do you play it better, or is there any lyrics you wish you didn't write back then because you were teenagers?
No, I mean, my belief is that every record I've ever made was the best record I could make at that time. And, you know, I don't believe in like going back saying, well, that kind of, you know, I would have done this, because we all loved that record when it came out. We were all incredibly proud of it. And to me, I'll honor that record forever. You know, I don't know if we play things better. It is interesting to get into that record, to look at it just as a whole piece. I mean, as kids growing up, we were very indie music minded. You know, we listened to REM and the Cramps and the Dead Kennedys and, you know, the 3 o'clock and the Rain Parade and X and all these other bands. And so the music scene that we were born out of was more of an indie music scene. And so, you know, we immediately started jamming, taking things, changing them, adding songs, writing songs. I mean, the first day we opened for Aerosmith, our first arena tour in 1990, we opened with a new song.
Jesus,
like,
right?
The manager was like, what are you doing? You're here to play your record. So.
Yeah.
And so, it's interesting to look back, but also to focus and have the discipline to look at, okay, so we're going to go out and we're going to play this record in its entirety, and then we're going to play all of our hits and songs that we've played throughout the rest of our career. It's a really cool thing, and it's different for us. It's something we've never done, so Chris and I are looking forward to it.
Can you believe it's been 30 years? It's quite something, isn't it?
I mean, not really. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Okay, I think the line is starting to disappear on us, i.e. they're telling us it's time to wrap up. It's been real nice talking to you. In a word, Jimmy Page, when you worked with him, what was that like?
Jimmy was a gentleman. He was couldn't have been cooler. You know, to be and also a huge music fan still to this day,
big time.
And
I mean,
always curious and always looking for new things, and it was amazing.
What a session, man, to have live at the Greek. I mean, that, again, is such one of those albums I just keep going back to, because you guys did a tremendous job on all of that stuff on there. Anyway,
thank you.
Listen, man, we will leave it there. It's been really nice to talk to you, and I genuinely mean that. Very excited about the fact that the band are coming to see us in Dublin, and we will see you in October. Rich Robinson, Black Crowes, appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.